VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, John Russell tells us about growing unhappiness among American workers. Later, Brian Lynn presents this week's technology report. Finally, Katie Weaver and I explore an expansive national park in South Dakota. But first,
from truck drivers to Hollywood actors, many workers in the United States are complaining about low pay and long hours. The unhappiness is a result of changes in technology and the economy. And workers' jobs have changed as companies try to meet customer expectations for speed and ease. Jeffrey Palmerino is a driver for the delivery company United Parcel Service, or UPS, near Albany, New York. The full-time driver said he was forced to work overtime during the pandemic to deal with a large increase in orders. And 14-hour days in trucks without air conditioning became usual. For two straight years, a lot of us were forced to work 6 days a week, and that is not any way to live your life, said Palmerino. The working conditions led to talk of a strike by a labor group known as the Teamsters. But UPS and the Teamsters last week reached an early deal that would put off the strike. Labor activists said the deal would pressure other companies facing labor issues to raise their standards. Patricia Campos Medina is with the Worker Institute at the School of Industrial and Labor Relations at Cornell University. The Institute released a report this year that found the number of U.S. labor strikes rose 52% in 2022. The whole idea that consumer convenience is above everything broke down during the pandemic. We started to think, I'm at home ordering. But there is actually a worker who has to go to the grocery store, who has to cook this for me, so that I can be comfortable, Campos Medina said. Some UPS drivers recently joined the Writers Guild of America, or WGA, for protests. Hollywood screenwriters and actors are holding their first strikes in 40 years because the rise of streaming services has changed entertainment economics. The result has been decreased pay and faster production times with smaller teams. Actors and writers have long depended on residuals or long-term payments for reruns and other airings of films and television shows. But reruns do not exist on streaming services where shows and movies are available at all times. There is also no easy way, such as ticket sales or ratings, to determine their popularity. As a result, streaming services often pay little for residuals. Adam Shapiro is an actor known for the Netflix hit Never Have I Ever. He said many actors were happy at first to accept lower pay for the sudden increase in acting jobs that streaming services offered. But the need for better pay gained urgency when it became clear streaming is the future of the business, he said. Over the past 10 years, we realized, oh, that's now how Hollywood works, Everything is streaming, Shapiro said during a recent union event. Shapiro said he agreed to a deal offering 20% of his normal pay for Never Have I Ever because it seemed like a great opportunity and it's going to be all over the world. He added, "Unfortunately, we're all starting to realize that if we keep doing this, we're not going to be able to pay our bills." Daniel Sanchez-Witzel is co-creator of the recently released Netflix show Survival of the Thickest. She said television shows traditionally hire a team of writers for the length of the series production. However, Netflix only lets her keep one writer after pre-production to deal with any changes in the story. "It's not sustainable, and I'll never do that again," the screenwriter said. I'm John Russell.
Newly developed artificial intelligence, AI, systems have demonstrated the ability to perform at human-like levels in some areas. But one serious problem with the tools remains: they can produce false or harmful information repeatedly. The development of such systems, known as chatbots, has progressed greatly in recent months. Chatbots have shown the ability to interact smoothly with humans and produce complex writing based on short written commands. Such tools are also known as generative AI or large language models. Chatbots are one of many different AI systems currently under development. Others include tools that can produce new images, video, and music, or can write computer programs. As the technology continues to progress, some experts worry that AI tools may never be able to learn how to avoid false, outdated, or damaging results. The term hallucination has been used to describe when chatbots produce inaccurate or false information. Generally, hallucination describes something that is created in a person's mind but is not happening in real life. Daniela Amodi is co-creator and president of Anthropic, a company that produced a chatbot called Claude 2. She told the Associated Press, "I don't think that there's any model today that doesn't suffer from some hallucination." Amodi added that such tools are largely built to predict the next word. With this kind of design, she said, there will always be times when the model gets information or context wrong. Anthropic, ChatGPT maker OpenAI, and other major developers of such AI systems say they are working to make AI tools that make fewer mistakes. Some experts question how long that process will take or if success is even possible. "This isn't fixable," says Professor Emily Bender. She is a language expert and director of the University of Washington's Computational Linguistics Laboratory. Bender told the AP she considers the general relationship between AI tools and proposed uses of the technology a mismatch. Indian computer scientist Ganesh Bagler has been working for years to get AI systems to create recipes for South Asian foods. He said a chatbot can generate misinformation in the food industry that could hurt a food business. A single hallucinated recipe element could be the difference between a tasty meal or a terrible one. Bagler questioned OpenAI chief Sam Altman during an event on AI technology held in India in June. "I guess hallucinations in ChatGPT are still acceptable, but when a recipe comes out hallucinating, it becomes a serious problem," Bagler said. Altman answered by saying he was sure developers of AI chatbots would be able to get the hallucination problem to a much, much better place in the future. But he noted such progress could take years. "At that point, we won't still talk about these," Altman said. "There's a balance between creativity and perfect accuracy, and the model will need to learn when you want one or the other." Other experts who have long studied the technology say they do not expect such improvements to happen anytime soon. The University of Washington's Bender describes a language model as a system that has been trained on written data to model the likelihood of different strings of word forms. Many people depend on a version of this technology whenever they use the autocomplete tool when writing text messages or emails. The latest chatbot tools try to take that method to the next level by generating whole new passages of text. But Bender says the systems are still just repeatedly choosing the most predictable next word in a series. Such language models are designed to make things up. That's all they do, she noted. Some businesses, however, are not so worried about the ways current chatbot tools generate their results. Shane Orlick is head of marketing technology company Jasper AI. He told the AP, "Hallucinations are actually an added bonus." He explained many chatbot users were pleased that the company's AI tool had created takes on stories or angles that they would have never thought of themselves. I'm Brian Lynn.
Brian Lynn joins me now to talk more about his technology report. Thanks for being here, Brian.
Sure, Ashley. Glad to be here.
This week, you examined whether AI chatbots trained to perform like humans can learn to make fewer mistakes. And from your report, it seems like this question is still highly debatable.
So yes, for sure there are many differing opinions over whether machines will ever be able to learn how to filter out information that's either false or damaging in some way. As humans, we are able to use our own intelligence and other methods to judge whether something is true or not. And when we write something, we are doing so with a lifetime of knowledge and experiences. A chatbot does not have such abilities to guide its use.
Have AI developers said what kind of solutions they have in mind to try to improve the performance of chatbots and reduce the amount of false or misleading results?
Well, so far, the developers are not saying much about any specific methods they're using to try and improve chatbot performance, and most experts agree that this will be a difficult task. But the chief of ChatGPT maker OpenAI pointed to one important characteristic such systems will need to develop. He said they need the ability to know when a user wants creative results or when they need perfect accuracy.
Okay, thanks again for being here, Brian.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ashley.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. On today's National Parks Journey, we explore a unique landscape in the North Central United States.
The land is big and mostly flat. There are endless fields of corn, wheat, and soybeans. Colors of green and gold paint the earth for kilometers. But as we travel west, the farmland gives way to wild grasses. It grows tall here, under a huge blue sky. Farther on, however, the grass becomes much shorter. A strong, dry wind blows continuously from the west. Suddenly, the land is torn and rocky, dry and dusty. The green is gone. Now we are surrounded by light reds and browns. Purple and gold hues can be seen as well. All around are broken, disorganized forms. There are sharp walls of rocks and hills and valleys of all sizes and shapes. Welcome to Badlands National Park in the state of South Dakota.
Hundreds of thousands of years ago, this whole area was grassland. Then, forces of nature destroyed the grass in some parts. Water and ice cut into the surface of the earth, splitting open some of its oldest rocks. Nature beat at the rocks, wearing them away. The result is one of the strangest sights, a place of otherworldly beauty. Altogether, the Badlands cover more than 15,000 square kilometers. About 10% is part of the national park. The area is a study in extremes. Temperatures in the summer have been as high as 46 degrees Celsius. In the winter, they have dropped to as low as 41 degrees below zero. Life in the Badlands is difficult. Its name comes from the Lakota Native Americans. They called the area Mako Sika, or Land Bad, because of the extreme temperatures and harsh landscape.
The term Badlands has come to be used for areas where soft rock is eroded in a very dry climate. Looking at a rock wall in the Badlands is like looking back through time. The layers and colors in the Badlands' strange formations were formed over millions of years. The long history of the Badlands began some 65 million years ago, around the time the dinosaurs died out. A huge sea covered the middle of North America. It was drying up. The land at the bottom of the sea was black shale rock. That shale is now at the bottom of the Badlands. The next level of rock is from what geologists call the Oligocene epoch. That period began about 37 million years ago. At that time, the Badlands area was warm and wet. A jungle grew there. A large number of warm-blooded animals lived in the jungle. Some of these animals were buried in the mud left behind by floods. Over millions of years, their bodies turned to rock. These fossil remains are a record in stone of what ancient animals looked like. The Badlands holds the world's richest collection of fossils from the Oligocene epoch. The area contains fossils from rhinos, horses, and huge cats. Because of this evidence here, we know that the period was great for mammals. Their total population worldwide increased greatly, and they grew in body size to take over the land left by the dinosaurs. About 28 million years ago, the environment of North America became much drier and cooler. The jungle disappeared. The land in the center of the continent became a prairie. A prairie is a large open area of grassland. The prairie here is one of the world's largest.
The Badlands were created on the western edge of this great prairie. They started to take shape as rain, wind, snow, and ice beat down on the land. The rain and ice tore deep cuts in the soft earth. Over time, they became wider and deeper. The wind dried the earth and blew away the topsoil. Today, rain comes to the Badlands mostly in sudden, fierce storms. Often, the area's rivers are cooked dry by the hot sun and wind. Yet, when it rains, the rivers flood. Their waters cut even deeper into the soft earth. The Badlands are very dry, but they are not a desert. They are filled with many living things. There are short native grasses and wildflowers. The national park is home to many animals: bison, bighorn sheep, and prairie dogs live here. Prairie dogs are small animals that dig tunnels in the earth and live underground. Every living thing in the Badlands must be able to survive the extreme conditions. That includes the humans who have called the area home. Several hundred years ago, the Sioux tribe of Native Americans lived all around the Badlands. At the time, the Badlands were rich with animals. There were wolves and bears, bighorn sheep, and deer. The most important animal to the Sioux, however, was the bison. They look like huge, hairy, wild cattle. The Sioux way of life was completely organized around hunting bison. They used every part of the animal. They ate the meat. They made clothing and tents from its fur and skins. They used the bones as tools. They even boiled the feet to make a sticky substance to hold things together.
White settlers who came west also hunted bison. In fact, they hunted bison until very few remained. They also planted crops where the bison had once fed. In time, the Sioux way of life on the Great Plains came to an end. The settlers and the federal government did not respect Native American cultures. The government expected the Sioux Indians to learn to farm. But the Badlands' harsh environment was not good farmland. With few bison left to hunt, the Indians were sent to live on a reservation next to the Badlands area. The Badlands became a national monument in 1939. Congress declared it a national park in 1978. More than 1 million people visit Badlands National Park each year.
The park is now a protected area for bison. The National Park Service moved bison back into the Badlands. The animals are doing well. So are the bighorn sheep, foxes, coyotes, golden eagles, and prairie dogs. Most of the wild animals must be watched from a distance, especially the bison. The Park Service says a full-grown bison can weigh as much as a small car. It can run faster than a horse. And it can become angry and dangerous easily. Today, of course, the history of the Badlands continues to be written. As measured in geological time, the Badlands are being destroyed rapidly. The area, with its unusually soft rock, is being worn away at a rate of 1 centimeter per year. In a few more million years, the Badlands will be worn away forever. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
That's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.